images. What are we looking at?
We're looking to Portal, which is actually entrance of the show, which is made from selenite, and we have laser beams go through every of this piece, which enlarge and amplify light. So you have this abundance of light. And the idea the public goes through is they're going through the kind of portal between, you know, life and death, between lightness and darkness, between one state of mind, other state of mind, wherever you like to project.
And you were very specific about the spot where it needed to be.
Yes.
Why here?
Yes, because this is the spot that I really public wanted to have this entrance to the show. And it's perfect spot, actually.
Do you think that people will feel invited to walk through the portal?
Some exhibitions, they stay and they wait, because this portal also have energy. Mm. When you stay a long time, you can feel it. So the portal is magnetic, actually, and the best photographs you can make right there.
Well, we'll welcome everybody tomorrow.
Yes. Can you go through portal?
Absolutely.
Yourself? Let's go.
Go.
And slow. Stay a little bit there. You know, feel the heat. Close your eyes. And, you know, everything takes time. If you're going to the gym to get muscles, you can't get muscles just in one day. So we always think that we can experience an energy immediately. It's not like that. You have to be in present. You have to be here and now. And you have to have patience and stillness.
This is A Closer Look With... Every episode, we get to know an artist whose work is presented at the Stedelijk Museum Amsterdam, a conversation recorded here at the museum. My name is Emma Haryadi Herman, and today we're taking a closer look at the work of Marina Abramović. Marina Abramović is a groundbreaking pioneer of performance art. For over 50 years, she's captivated audiences by exploring art as a vehicle for mental and spiritual transformation. She brought performance art from its experimental beginnings into the mainstream. She's often used her body as a medium and stretched her mental and physical endurance to the limit and sometimes even beyond. The exchange of energy between her and the audience has been a key theme throughout her career. And perhaps that helps to explain the enormous buzz in this building around this exhibition, because the energy around here has been ridiculous. Some people may know that you've lived in Amsterdam for a very long time.
Yes.
And you came here in the 70s and now you're back. You're riding your old bike. You're meeting old friends, going to these old places. So I imagine it brings back a lot of memories of the young Marina. And what was she like?
You know, I remember the places I've been. I remember canals. I remember, you know, little corners we have coffee. You know, maybe a little change here and there, but it's the same Amsterdam like I left. Except, of course, the feeling is different. I mean, the things have changed, you know, in a way that it was so much more free when I was there.
Yeah.
And the people could express their feelings. They can say whatever they want.
Yeah.
It was freedom of speech. And it was so human, you know. So my memories that... That was all this really, really very sentimental.
And your memory of yourself. So if you look at yourself as the young Marina in the 70s.
Ooh, I hardly want to ever do that. But if I have to, you know, old Marina was coming from Yugoslavia with Yugoslav passport,
yeah,
with no permission to be here because I didn't have the visa or anything. I was illegal 7 years in your country. And then finally, I remember going to the... To the police, and I said to them, you know, I'm 7 years illegal here. Can I get passport? And they look at me and say, you're crazy. I mean, we're going to deport you now. I say, yes, you're going to deport me, but I will come back again. And they got such a kind of touch by my honesty. They say to me, okay, when you're so honest, we will give you 6 months to learn Dutch.
No way.
And then I say, okay, 6 months is a good time. So I was thinking that actually the knowledge have to come through my dreams.
Okay.
So I bought the books on Dutch and I put under the pillow. And I was sleeping, and the only problem with the neck, but I didn't get any Dutch in my dream.
It didn't work.
Didn't work. Till the day before, I supposed to actually go and give this conversation in Dutch for the passport.
Mm-hmm.
And I really panicked. And I went to friend's houses. I have to do conversation in Dutch. What am I going to do?
What was her advice?
So her advice was to write the text phonetically. And then I really read this phonetically text and learn it by night.
Yeah.
And the next morning, you know, Dutch people are slow. They maybe smoke the joint in the evening. In the morning, they drink coffee. And I dramatically open the door. I say, Ich bin Marina Abramović. And I say all the text. Nobody asked me anything. They look at me and say, I said, this is all I know in Dutch. And they start laughing so crazy. Say, okay, you make effort, and I got the passport.
You did it.
I still don't speak Dutch.
Why go through all this trouble? What made Amsterdam worth it in that time?
First, I came because I was invited to the Apple Gallery. As you know, the Apple Gallery was the first performance gallery in Europe.
Yeah.
And I was doing performances. And then where I met Ulay. And then after, I lived with him, and we worked for 12 years. And we live in the car. So it was very simple.
And that place, the Apple, was really pivotal, and that's where you were essentially inventing this new discipline.
No, I invented it already in Belgrade. I came already as a performance artist, but it was the place that was possibility to show the work to the audience.
Do you see your work in Belgrade as the first performance work that you did, or was it a gradual thing that had to kind of come into existence?
No, I started as a painter. I was 14 when I made my first exhibition as a painter, and I was painting my dreams because it was given to me. So simple. You go to sleep, you have a dream, and then you paint. And then later on, after that, I really went into this whole idea of working with the sound. And so the sound brings me to the body. Yeah. And when I made my first performance, I was 21, and then I knew it was my media.
Yeah.
And then I still do many other things. I even do opera now. I mean, but I still always go back to performance.
And so one of your early performances I'd love to talk about, Rhythm Zero, where you put 72 objects on a table, and they were varied objects. We see them downstairs in the exhibition, so a rose, a whip, a flashlight, but even a loaded gun. And you invited the audience to do as they saw fit with those objects to you. And you were there for 6 hours. Seems like it was a very extreme position to put yourself in. Can you describe what happened?
Do I have to do all over again? You know, this since I made this, this is exactly 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Every single reporter asked me the same question. I'm so bored to repeat myself.
Let's go.
So I just wanted to tell you that I was 23 and I wanted to see what happened if I do nothing and public do everything and public could almost kill me. So I knew the public could kill me. And then took me another 30 years of my life to create another work, which was An Artist's Present. But I was 65, and then I could really find a way how to lift human spirit.
When do you know when to push through or when to be kind to yourself and to listen to the signals that your body gives?
I never was kind to myself. That was not the purpose. I was not interested to do anything that I like because it's so easy and you never change pattern in your life and you're repeating always the same shit over and over again. I was much interested in the things that I don't know, the things I maybe can fail, the things unknown, the things that are mysterious, the things that I am afraid of. That was interesting for me always. And that was never easy. I never went for easy. I went for difficult.
And in recent years, you've set up the Marina Abramović Institute and you're training younger people in your method. And here at the Stedelijk Museum, we've also trained a group of people to re-perform some of your works. And can you describe what type of training that they go through to be ready for this?
I started this long, long time ago. I started, you know, this in early 70s already. And in the beginning, this my training was called Cleaning the House and was only concentrated on the performance artists and when I was teaching on the schools. And the Clean the House is very simple. It was that I understand that if I will do my performance work, I have to clean the house, but not your house when you live, your really own body.
Yeah.
Because in order to do this, you need to have strength, you need to have concentration, you need to have willpower. It's really not easy. And then I would take artists, mostly 12 to 14, into places which never comfortable, or it's too hot or it's too cold. And we all live together for 1 week, and 5 days is no talking and no eating, only drinking herbal tea and water, and then doing physical and mental exercises. exactly for the reason of concentration and pushing limits. It would be a very simple, wake up 5 in the morning, let's say in Denmark, you know, in February, and go to the sea right away.
Right.
And just swim there and come back, which is kind of pretty tough. Or you will open and close the door, but you don't enter and you don't exit, but opening, closing the door go for 3 hours.
Yeah.
So the one day after you do this for 1 hour, 2 hours, the door is not the door anymore. It's opening consciousness. It's stepping into another reality.
Right.
Things change.
Yeah.
How to understand here and now. And then you understand what is your breathing, where is your mind is going, how you can be in the moment. So we train all this too.
And now when you visit the exhibition, you're not performing, so you're watching others re-perform your works, and you're also watching the audience, I imagine. What's it like to... I imagine it's different seeing the audience when you are not the one performing.
You know, to me, every time I see performers performing my piece,
yeah.
It's amazingly emotional.
Yeah.
It's so emotional because I hardly can do it. I immediately cry because, you know, first of all, it's unbelievable to actually let myself do that because so many artists of my generation will never do that because they will never let their own work perform with anybody else. But I think you're so selfish. I think this is so
important.
Yeah,
you're being very generous with your work.
I think it's so important that my work have different lives and my work is happening without
right.
me.
Yeah.
And I know that when I die, the world is going to live. And that's most important.
What makes it that you want to cry when you see the performance?
Emotions, I can't explain.
Yeah.
I mean, do you always explain when you cry, why you're crying? Sometimes you just cry and you don't even know why.
Yeah.
I just feel so overwhelmed that my work exists without me.
Yeah. Right now in the galleries, when the performers are working, we have trained professionals to do security. We have trained professionals to provide first aid. There's all kinds of things where we make sure that everybody is safe and comfortable. There was none of that when you started out.
I could not even imagine.
No.
This is ridiculous. I never knew that the institution could protect you. I never even knew exist.
Yeah.
You know, I would do it anyway.
Do you wish that would have been here?
I'm not nostalgic about anything. First of all, you always have to adapt the time you live.
Yeah.
And this is new time. I mean, it's about time of political correctness, time of the freedom is completely restricted. And you can't do anything without all this what I call healthy compromises. But still, it's better to do it than not do it at all.
But still, it's a compromise from your
point
of view.
No, I'm saying to everybody, it's compromise. But, you know, in my time, it was not. In this time, it is. And what you can do? Nothing.
Yeah. And the artists who are working are really, we're trying to set them up, obviously, to do their best work and really to channel what you're giving them in your artwork. So,
yeah, but yes and not, because I'm always encouraging that artist channel his own personality.
Yeah.
And not, they can't channel mine. I don't ask this. I only give them the direction how work look like and the interpretation and what they put their own life inside. It's their own thing. And this is why every performance look different.
Yeah.
And I have to accept that.
So at the Stedelijk Museum, we have this long tradition of working with teens and young adults in a program we call the Blik Openers. And they give tours and they make content for our social media and programs. And they also prepare a question for every episode of this podcast. And so this time we have a question from Kato.
Can I just say something before
this
question? That I met Blik Openers just 2 days ago. And I think this was one of the most wonderful concepts. And I heard that this exists already 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I was asking them, you know, where they come from, their profession, and also the age. We are talking the age between 14 to 25.
Yeah.
That's like important age to really be open to art, open to see the world in different ways, to understand the different concepts the artists they're exposed to, and they make tour. I mean, this is one of the best concepts ever. So, what is the question?
Okay, let's hear it.
Hi, I'm Kato. I'm 70 years old and I'm a Blik opener. And I was wondering, do you believe in the afterlife? If so, what does it look like in your eyes?
I love this question. If I believe in afterlife, I don't believe in Jesus with beer. I don't believe in, I'm not crazy about religions anyway. But I really feel that there is some kind of energy up there that we can't explain, maybe divine energy, whatever. And I believe that actually physical body is mortal, but I think energy is immortal. Mm. And I think the energy can go into the space and be transformed, and can be in human, can be in birds, can be in the trees, or whatever. But that energy actually never die. So that's my belief in immortal life.
Mm. So, and in the immortal life, we're recording this conversation at the museum, and so downstairs from us is this incredible collection with everything from Mondrian to Kusama and everything in between. If there's one piece that you could bring with you into that immortal phase, what would it be?
One thing that I really love, it's not Stedelijk Museum, it's just next door, Van Gogh Museum, is the Night Sky from Van Gogh.
Yes.
And this is his last piece before he died. And that piece is for me, I will take it anyway. The way how he create the space and how he can see the molecules of the air, and it just brings this incredible strong emotions. I can stand and look at this piece for a long, long time. It's just something that really moves me deeply.
I hope you have a chance to do that still when you're in Amsterdam.
I'm always going there to see it.
Nice.
I will do this time too.
Thank you very much, Melina, for this conversation.
Thank you.
You've been listening to A Closer Look With. You can visit the exhibition by Marina Abramović until July 14th, 2024 at the Stedelijk Museum, Amsterdam. Next time on the podcast, we'll take a closer look at the work of Wilhelm Sussnau. Thanks for listening.